This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
It is Danny Blount. We got a little bit of news coming from the University of Washington. They've hired an offensive coordinator, John Donovan. Who? Exactly.
Ooh.
The assistant running backs coach with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Before that was at Penn State and Vanderbilt under James Franklin. He is going to be your new offensive coordinator. We'll see how that one turns out. I would say I was really excited about Kellen Moore and the possibility he would come back. He's staying in Dallas as the Cowboys offensive coordinator. Can't blame him for that. And very underwhelmed by this hire by the University of Washington. We'll see how it pans out.
I mean, he did make Leonard Fournette look less like a husk this season, considering Nick Foles was not very good as his quarterback and Gardner Minshew was probably learning on the fly for the most part. So
it's
there's
not,
that.
It's not entirely, and I don't believe in judging a guy entirely about the job he's coming from. He was the offensive coordinator at Penn State, so it's clear that he's at different points been a rising star or someone whose star was on the rise, but I'm very surprised that that is the hire that Jimmy Lake makes as his offensive coordinator. We'll see what it means and the type of football that they'll play. The Seahawks will practice once more. We'll see if George Fant gets back out on the field. He has not practiced the past two games because of a groin injury. And I find myself getting in that moment where I try to get a little bit excited, try to get pumped up, like feel a little bit of the adrenaline surge. And I think that there's one song that is the single best motivational track ever recorded in human history.
It is good.
You can't Queen.
I love Queen. Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, but I more like the payoff song. Bud, that's disgraceful.
Kicking
your
can all over the kicking place. There's at no point that that song plays that I don't feel like headbutting something. And thinking about going up against the Green Bay Packers, and I guess that's the best part of the playoffs for me in a game like this is we spend so much of the season like parsing the long-term implications. Can they sustain this turnover differential? Is Russell Wilson doing too much? Can this defense get better? Because I don't think what they've done is good enough to hold up. And you get to a moment like this, and it's kind of like, yeah, trends give you an idea, but it's about what happens for 60 minutes. It is four quarters of football, and it's kind of that James Vanderbeek, like we can go out and be gods for the second half of this football game. Like that can happen. You can have a team that absolutely plays way above its level, has a great game, and sustainability doesn't matter. The ability to replicate it doesn't. You need one. I firmly believe if they win this game, they're going to the Super Bowl. Whether they're at home against Minnesota, if they have to go to Minnesota, if they go on the road to San Francisco, I think if they win this game, they're going to the Super Bowl. And I'm pumped up to see if they've got a shot. They've got, in my mind, the most reliable quarterback in the game right now. Lamar Jackson had a better season, but nobody's had a more consistent, had a bigger impact on his team than Russell Wilson this year. And he's coming off one of his best playoff games in his life.
I don't know if this win, if they were to win on Sunday, if that means they go to the Super Bowl. I'm still wondering how they would fare against San Francisco in a third game. I know they've played really well in all of those games. It would probably go down to the wire, but I think they're going to win on Sunday. I feel very good about their chances against this Packers team. I said it earlier in the week, and it's going to be really hard to change my mind on this front. I feel like I have a very good feel for when a team is full of it, and I just don't buy into this Packers record. That 13-3 seems very hollow, and I know that a lot of people from Green Bay would be saying the exact same thing about this Seahawks team, which also has really, I mean, what's the margin of victory over the course of the entire year? 7 points or something like that as far as the point differential. But this is a team that in Green Bay that I just don't find remotely scary. And I know that there are some players there that are. Za'Darius Smith. Yeah, that's a guy that you're going to have to find a way to stop. And with the offensive line injuries, it's going to be difficult. And Aaron Jones has had a good year. But I just don't look at Aaron Rodgers the same way that I used to. I don't look at Matt LaFleur with any remote sense of fear like I would with a guy like Kyle Shanahan, who's also going to be, you know, doing the same kind of thing as Matt LaFleur this weekend, coaching in a playoff game as a head coach for the first time. But I look at this Packer team, and it just doesn't scare me, even though this is a game that's going to be on the road. So I am excited for it. I think they're going to win. I think they're going to take it down. I don't know what the final score is. We know it's probably going to be close, just given how everything has gone this year. But they've got a really good chance, and I'm taking the W in this one.
I think that Seattle comes into this game. The biggest thing they have going against them, and the problem that I have with poking holes in Green Bay, is that the same holes can be poked back in Seattle. That they haven't had overwhelming victories, and they've tended to kind of survive. Well, the biggest similarity that these two teams have, both plus 12 in turnover margin. The biggest reason both of them are at the spot that they are is because they've had a huge advantage. They're tied for the third best turnover margin there. In Green Bay, it's for them, it's because they don't turn the ball over. For Seattle, their positive turnover margin comes because they've been really good at taking the ball away. And maybe this is as simple as it comes down to a question of the quarterbacks. And if it does, if that's what it is, that's great for Seattle. And that's weird to say, because when Russell came into the league, Aaron Rodgers was the gold standard at the position. He was the guy, even when you thought, like, okay, I'd rather have Russ because of the length of his career and how young he is, you still kind of conceded that, yeah, he's probably not playing as well as Rodgers. Over these past two seasons, I think that's changed. I think not only do you choose Russ if you're asked which guy do you want, you choose Russ because he's got more of his career left. I think you also choose Russ because he's playing better right now, and he's definitely had the better season.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Russell Wilson's been the best quarterback all year long. Lamar Jackson is a unicorn. I don't think it's fair to really compare him to anyone else. What he's doing this year has been so unique and something that we really haven't seen in the NFL in, what, like 5-6 years or so, when we had that first surge of all these mobile quarterbacks, Colin Kaepernick, RG3, Russell Wilson, that were all in that same kind of conversation. This is a totally new spin, a new take on that side of things, because Jackson in that power running game for the Ravens has been so difficult to stop. Third point differential in the season is like, what, 200-something? It's insane how well they've played this year. But Russell Wilson's been awesome. And Russell Wilson is coming off an incredible road playoff game where he had almost no help from his running game. And if you are a believer in Russell Wilson, this is a game for you to dream. As some would say, maybe you dream on, which is actually, Danny O'Neill, the correct pump-up song. Oh, yeah. That build-up. What, you don't like this, Danny? Look at this look on Danny's face right now. I'm not a fan of that look.
Yeah, he looks pretty happy in the studio with you there.
I know, he does. There he is right there. Big old smile on his face because he's dreaming. He's dreaming of something that the Seahawks have not been able to do since 1983. What is that? That is a road playoff victory in the divisional round. This is a weird, like, synth version of it.
What the hell?
It's a live version.
What the hell are we listening to?
You don't
what
like
are you
Dream On?
Us? Not to get me. This doesn't make me want to headbutt a wall.
Wow, this is like a karaoke version.
This is Sir Steven Tyler.
By the way, so fun fact about Steven Tyler.
What are other nominations you've got for pump up songs?
It's a great pump up song. Listen, just because
better than Queen?
I you know what, the We Will Rock You song is just not my favorite. All over the place. This is not fair. You pick the live version, Jess. This isn't fair.
You pick all versions of your song. When you pick the song, it's all versions.
It's all versions? Okay. I suppose.
You can't cherry pick your versions.
Well, yes, okay. But the version of this song that is not live is way better for Dream On.
I will give my runner up pick for the most exciting pump up music, and somebody sent it in here. It's a new one to the rotation. It's added very recently. The Washington Huskies actually took the field to it under Steve Sarkisian at some points. Till I Collapse by Eminem, okay. I think is number two in my motivational rounds of what I would like to listen to before something. AC/DC's definitely on there. But I also feel like AC/DC that's kind of part of Brock and Salk. Like AC/DC is there. I feel like it would be horning in on their bit to be able to do that.
I do like AC/DC. How about this? We can take it from a soundtrack. Going the Distance, which is the song that plays when Rocky. And Apollo Creed are duking it out in that 12 rounds. And as the fight continues, they're just bloodier and bloodier. And they're basically like, they're not blocking, which again is a theme of all the Rocky movies. There's no blocking at all. And since we saw the Seahawks beat the Philadelphia Eagles this past Sunday, we get to appropriate that This is our song now.
You vanquish them, so you steal their motivational music. I like that.
Yeah, that's right. Jadeveon Clowney taking your quarterback out, and we're taking your songs. Yeah.
Kitsy's not going to like that at all.
Well, listen. It's okay. I don't have to be kind on a Friday. It's different. We're getting geared up for a battle against the People's Republic of Green Bay. These people in their shanties, they go out to the stadium and they're forced to dig all the snow out of the stadium. We have to free them. We have to free them from their prison as they work in this death camp at Lambeau Field. We're going
to
do it.
Not to nitpick, Paul.
What?
This is kind of long. Like, the key for the pump-up music is that it needs to take you from 0 to 60 in about 15 seconds. Like, you've got to, it's got to get you. This is, oh, he's lifting weights. Oh, he's running on the beach. Oh, he's shadowboxing with Apollo Creed. Oh, now he's doing sit-ups inverted. Like, all of those things. It's a slow build sort of thing.
Now it's
a slow build.
Now I got to get into my workout playlist.
Other suggestions that have come in, Eye of the Tiger.
Like all Rocky music essentially works.
This one's pretty good. And this, as a motivational track, actually works better than if you listen to the whole song, because the whole song's too long. The whole song, like, it should be half as long as it actually is. Somebody else suggested Mother from Danzig, which I absolutely love that song. I saw a woman karaoke it about 2 months ago, and she was absolutely awesome. Here's the format for how the Seahawks beat the Packers, in my mind. The format for them is they withstand Aaron Rodgers pushing the ball up and down the field. They withstand giving up a couple of touchdowns, or maybe it's 13 points in the first half. They withstand that, and they have a big play or two, and they're within a field goal at halftime. Seattle's goal in this game is to get the game to the fourth quarter. If they get the game to the fourth quarter, I think they've won. I think that they need to look and target and try to have big plays in the first half, because I do think that it's going to take points to win this game. I don't see Seattle winning this game with 20, 24 points. I think they're going to need to score 30 points, because I just don't think – I think they're going to have to weather a storm early. I think they are going to have to be like Rocky, and they're going to have to eat a couple of uppercuts early in this game. I think that they're going to have to shake them off, but they're going to have to keep pace. They can't go down at the half 16-0 like they did in the 2014 NFC Championship game. They're not going to be able to dig their way out of it this time. They need to keep pace a little bit earlier on, and I think they can do it, especially when you look at Green Bay's vulnerability to passes deep and the fact that DK Metcalf has emerged the way he has. And if Tyler Lockett gets healthier, you suddenly got a combination between the two of them. I think Seattle has the personnel to be able to take advantage of them deep.
This offense for the Seahawks can carry them. I think it can. And I don't know that they will need that many points in this one, because I don't know that Green Bay's offense can carry them in the same degree that it used to be able to. And yes, it's more balanced, which means that you don't have to see a game from Aaron Rodgers where he is doing the entire thing, like a 5-touchdown, 300-yard performance. Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams are a pretty capable 1-2 combination. Both of these guys can also pass protect for Aaron Rodgers, but I don't think it's going to need to be, Danny, one of those games where they have to outscore Green Bay to that degree, because I just don't think that Green Bay's capable of that anymore. I don't trust Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers couldn't hit the broadside of a barn indoors over the last couple of weeks. And now all of a sudden, in a game where there are elements, there's snow, it's not going to be the pristine conditions of the Vikings stadium or the Lions stadium. You're really telling me that this is a team that is all of a sudden going to be able to make it happen in the elements just because they're a team that's from the elements? I think that that's going to put things back on Seattle's level. And I know that Russ has had some issues outside before when things haven't been great, and there's supposed to be a lot of snow out there, but I just don't buy this Packers team. I've used the F word on them earlier this week. Frauds.
You can't use that on the different F word.
Yeah, that F word. Yeah, and I don't use that word lightly, but I look at a team that's 13-3 that doesn't really have anything outside of Za'Darius Smith that intimidates me, and that's why I think the Seahawks are going to win on Sunday.
It's Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to take a tour around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
That is Ken Norton, we learned from Boy Howdy. It's Ken Norton who is declaring it to be an exceptional day. And it is an exceptional day.
I believe
it. The Seahawks take off. Yeah, heck yeah. Let's go.
Guess what do we got? Well, the NFL's chief medical officer has called Carson Wentz's reporting of his concussion heroic. Carson Wentz, his own hero.
I agree with that. It's going to take players. The way to stop or mitigate the effects of concussions and head injuries starts with players telling when they suffer them. There's no metric, there's no measurement that will tell you when a guy suffered a concussion. He has to let you know. And I've covered players for long enough to know that every one of them will tell you that they're concerned about the long-term impacts of head injuries. And every one of them has told me, off the record, that I've asked, have you ever concealed impacts of a head injury? They've said yes. And until that disconnect stops, it's really difficult for medical professionals to be able to accurately diagnose when someone suffers a head injury.
Is it an unwritten rule, though, that as a quarterback, you have to grind it out? Even if you've suffered an injury like that? Because I totally understand your line of thinking on that, Danny. But, I mean, remember, what was it? I think Cam Newton and the Panthers were playing some team in the playoffs. I want to say it was the Saints. It was someone indoors. And Cam Newton clearly suffered a concussion. Clearly suffered a concussion. He went in, I think, to the 10th. I think he was out for just a little bit, but he was back out there to finish the game. And he was dazed. He was slow getting up, and he denied it after the game. But I do think that for quarterbacks, it might be a little different. And I don't know that it necessarily should be, but would they have had a better chance to win with Carson Wentz a little bit woozy, a little bit dizzy down the stretch than they would have with Josh McCown?
You don't know the severity of it, though. I mean,
right. Only he does. You're right. And for all we know, he was
down wobbling. And down is up sometimes. And
Yeah. The player being honest about the impacts of the head injury, that's the only way you get to a point where medical professionals can diagnose when someone should and shouldn't play. They have to be. And that's kind of whether it has to happen if you're going to be able to do that. The question I think that should be asked, and that I don't know if people would like the answer to it, is should a player, when he's not concussed, be able to tell you, hey, no matter what happens, no matter what happens to my head and how groggy I feel, I want to be able to continue to play as long as I can function. Unless the coach thinks that I'm so impaired that I can't come out, it's my choice to try and play through a concussion. Should you allow a player to do that? They're adult men. We allow boxers to fight. I think that most people would say, no, that decision has to be taken out of their hands. They're not in the best situation to judge it. I think that's the difficult part we're going. I think it's a positive sign that Carson Wentz accurately described his symptoms because it allows the medical staff to accurately treat the injury that he has suffered.
It's different for non-quarterbacks, too, because Carson Wentz, we know he's going to be the starting quarterback for the Eagles next season. If you play at another position, there might be an unfair mindset that a coach has of someone who is not willing to go back out there or try to go back out there, and that guy might end up losing his job, and that's been a problem in the past, and I know, speaking from former Patriot Ted Johnson and some of these other guys, when you suffer a concussion, you are expected to try to tough it out, especially back in the day. Things have changed, I think, from a public perception standpoint and from a public relations standpoint, but I really do wonder how much it has changed. A guy like Carson Wentz doing that is definitely progress, but I still wonder if it's just too hard to change football's culture that has been in place for so many years overnight. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a while.
If a player is pressured to continue to play through a head injury, they should be able to sue the team.
I agree on that front. I mean, shoot, that's like Buddy Kilmer in Varsity Blues. You can't do stuff like that. You can't force these guys to go back out there. But I also think that there's sort of like an expectation and that's unsaid. And it might hurt you if you don't go back in.
Yeah, I think, Paul, your point is that although it isn't right and is unfair, it exists.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to clarify your point there,
you.
That you're not backing up.
No, I am not Buddy Kilmer.
Way of thinking.
I'm not telling Reggie Ray or Billy Bob to go back into the... Excuse me, Reggie Ray's not another teen movie. Billy Bob to go back in the game.
Well, Atlanta Falcons tight ends coach, former NFL head coach Mike Mularkey is retiring after 25 years.
Mike Mularkey had a pretty good run overall, didn't he? He was a head coach at a couple spots. He was a big-time coordinator. That was the most success he could have possibly got with the last name Mularkey. Like, that is a major upset that he was able to become a head coach with all of the puns and bad jokes and suspicion and condescension that just the uttering of his name must have initially created.
Yeah, it's not great. And honestly, whenever I hear the name Mike Mularkey, I just think of mediocrity and
he was a pretty good offensive coordinator with the Steelers.
And you know what's unfair for a lot of coaches, and I'll admit I'm guilty of this. There are a lot of great assistant coaches out there, and then they become a head coach, and then all of a sudden as the head coach you just forget that they were great assistant coaches because they failed as a head coach, and a lot of head coaches fail. Assistant head coaches, there's some really good ones out there. Mike Mularkey's one of those guys where I remember him as the head coach and not as an assistant, but he did have a very successful assistant coaching career.
The biggest difference between the caliber of coordinator he was and the type of head coach he was, Norv Turner. Yeah. Norv Turner is an excellent offensive coordinator and an awful head coach.
100%. You can say the same thing about Dick LeBeau when he finally got a head coaching gig, but for years and years, fantastic defensive coordinator.
Niners are healing up nicely in their bye week. Safety Jaquiski Tartt, defensive end D. Ford, and guard Mike Person are all on track to play against Minnesota.
What chance do you give the Vikings of winning that game?
I mean, they gave them almost no chance to beat the New Orleans Saints. I think the Saints are a better football team than the San Francisco 49ers, and I think it's an easier place to play. They can run the football. They have some pretty capable weapons at receiver. We'll see how healthy Adam Thielen is, and we'll see if Stephon Diggs doesn't throw a temper tantrum in the midst of this game. It always boils back down to Kirk Cousins and whether or not he can beat this 49ers defense. And I'm sorry, but I once again am going to pick against Kirk Cousins.
I would take Kirk Cousins ahead of Jimmy Garoppolo right now.
You would. It's fair to say he did win on the road.
I would take Kirk Cousins ahead of Jimmy Garoppolo right now. I think the Vikings are going to win this game.
Wow. And we got a home NFC championship, theoretically.
If the Seahawks win, I think they're going to be playing at home in the NFC championship.
More changes in Washington. After parting ways with Bruce Allen last week, they announced they were dismissing Vice President of Football Operations Eric Schaefer after 17 years and reassigning Doug Williams.
Now, the really funny part about this is Schaefer was the guy. They said they were going to let him go. That got reported. Then they said they were staying, and that got reported. And then somebody said, no, he's actually going to be let go here pretty soon. And they just released those competing pieces of news because Snyder was trying to figure out who the leaks were.
Sounds about right.
It's possible that both versions of the news that he tried to leak, both of them ended up getting leaked, which is fantastic. Multiple leaks.
I hate that Washington is getting credit for, like, finally firing Bruce Allen and finally firing all the pieces of Daniel Snyder's cabinet that needed to go, like, 20 years ago. It's unfortunate.
Bruce Allen was the subject of one of my five favorite quotes that I've ever read. It was in a Mike Wise, who was, I think he's now with The Undefeated. Prior to that, he was with The Washington Post, a columnist there. And when, I think it was when Scott McLuhan was in Washington, he had a quote from an anonymous source who said that Bruce Allen brushes his teeth with Coors Light because they were talking about them firing McLuhan after allegations of substance abuse, of drinking. And that was the quote he had about Bruce Allen, which I was like, whoa.
Dang.
I've never read that one before. Like, wow. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to bring in Maurice Jones-Drew, who shares a little bit of history with Marshawn Lynch. He's got a great view of this game, and we hope he has a couple of beast mode stories for us. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant, and we're joined now by Maurice Jones-Drew, who once on an afternoon, not so long ago, ran laps around the Huskies defense when he was with UCLA and then went on to a tremendous career in the NFL, now at the NFL Network. Maurice Jones-Drew is with us. And Maurice, were you tired after running for more than 300 yards against the Huskies?
That was a long time ago. I actually definitely cramped up because it wasn't one of those days that we were used to.
Yeah, you were not used to a team refusing to tackle you at all, just letting you run roughshod over us. It was memorable for us in a sad way for Husky fans like myself. But you're an incredible player. I'm excited to talk to you because you share some roots with Marshawn Lynch. You guys were both coming out of Oakland at about the same time. Did you know Marshawn at all in high school?
Yeah, actually, his mother and my mother worked together at the same phone company. I think it used to be called Pacific Bell, then it became AT&T, and so that's kind of how we met. I actually ran track with him as well. So yeah, I knew Marshawn coming out of high school. He was at the OAL, I was in the BBL in a different league, but he's a tremendous athlete. He's a tremendous player, a tremendous person. So it wasn't shocking to hear that he was coming out of retirement to come back, and then to come out of retirement and still impact the game the way he's done. I mean, that to me is, well, I've seen that before.
Was his personality like that the first time that you met him?
I think he's when he's comfortable with you, it's completely different than, you know, if he doesn't know you. And then that's just kind of where our area and where we've come from. He grew up in a different area than I did. He grew up in Oakland. I grew up in Antioch. But, you know, my relationship with Marshawn is a tremendous one. We conversate when we do see each other. We conversate a lot about just different things in the Bay Area, about, like, his path and where he's going in life, and same with mine. And then we rarely talk about football in those situations. He's a great dude. Like, I don't know if I can – I think people kind of, you know, they laugh and, you know, because of some of the things he does in his interviews, but like Marshawn would give you the shirt off his back. I remember playing in the Raiders, and my youngest son is a big Beast Mode fan, huge Beast Mode fan. And so we go up to Seattle, and I see Mama Lynch, and I say, you know, my youngest son's a big Beast Mode fan. She's like, well, your mom already called me and told me, and I already told Marshawn that he's giving you his jersey after the game. And he was like, well, I'll give it to you now. I'll just get another one. I'm like, no. Like, don't worry about it. Like, my man wants to use it. And so literally, like, gave me the jersey off his back before it was this whole jersey swapping thing, because my youngest son wanted it. And so, like, he's just a great family-oriented guy that loves the game of football. And he has a mindset and an attitude about him that's infectious. And you can kind of hear that when a lot of the players talk about him from the Seattle locker room.
Yeah, you certainly do, and you've seen the impact that he's made. He's a physical runner. He's never not going to be physical. He's never going to not refuse to go down the way he does, and he had a little bit of a stiff arm last week. In your mind, Maurice, what's the key for the Seahawks? If they're going to go into Green Bay and they're going to win, what do they need to do in this game?
Well, they have to start fast. I mean, that's always in the playoffs. The biggest thing is to try to start fast and jump on whatever team. If you're on the road, for sure, you want to jump on that team. And the Packers have the last couple of weeks, maybe the last month, started very slow, kind of stumbled out of the gates, and then they come roaring back. And so I think if Seattle's able to start fast and maybe get up 10-0 or, you know, 10-3, they can then do what they want to do, which is run the ball and run the air out of the stadium. And then all the pressure goes to the Packers, right? And so really it's just about starting fast and not turning the ball over. And you know, it's a simple thing. It's crazy, like it always comes up. But if you can run the ball 60% of the time in a playoff game, 90% of the time you'll win.
What do the Packers have in Aaron Jones?
Well, it's funny you say that. I think I'm gonna tweet out the article, the link that I did on Aaron Jones when he was coming out of school. When I was watching his tape at UTEP, he did everything that Christian McCaffrey did in college. He did it at UTEP. I mean, from playing wide receiver, taking 20-yard ends to the house, playing running back, picking up blitzes, everything that you're looking for, he did it. He just did it on a smaller stage. And so, you know, I think I put in there, like, he's just a poor man's Christian McCaffrey. But if you put him – like, for me, it's when you look at college athletes, who does more with less? And he was a guy that did so much more with not a lot of talent. And, I mean – now you're seeing it. Like, the Packers are leaning on him because he is the guy. Not only can he hurt you in the running game, he can hurt you in the passing game. He can hurt you in the return game if they give him opportunity to return as well. He was a great returner coming out of college as well. So he is a guy that you have to account for, because he could take up the distance, and he can you know, end your season in a one run.
We're talking to Maurice Jones-Drew, who had an incredible career, first at college at UCLA, then in the pros, starting with Jacksonville, and now as part of the NFL Network. You can watch their programming. The Game Day morning show starts Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific. On Sunday, it starts at 8 a.m. Pacific, and on that Sunday show, you'll see Kurt Warner sit down with Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson. Maurice, the Packers, their offense statistically, in terms of yards gained, passing yards, they're more middle of the road this season than we typically expect from them. Yet they're 13-3, and it seems like Matt LaFleur has brought more of a balance to them. Are they a more dangerous team in the playoffs this time around?
Well, I definitely think so. I think that, you know, any team that's balanced, that can run the ball, use the run to set up the pass, use the run to set up the play action pass, can win. And to be honest with you, down the stretch, they won games because of Aaron Jones. You know, I want to say it was the Vikings. They had three turnovers, a couple fumbles, a couple interceptions, and then they just went right back to the running game, and Aaron Jones had like 150 yards rushing or whatever it might have been. And then you go against the Lions, the same thing. And so as of lately, they've been leaning more on the running game. And yes, they want to get their passing game going, but, you know, really it's Davante Adams and a bunch of other guys, right? And so it's when teams are starting to load up on Davante Adams, it's hard for these other guys to get open. So, you know, you need that running game to balance and help take a lot of pressure off of Aaron Rodgers. And they also do a great job with their RPO game, where it may be a run, but Aaron Rodgers flips it out to a receiver because he's getting some space, and you have to tackle a guy one-on-one. And you know, when you have one of the brightest quarterbacks in the game, and when I say that, I'm talking about Jeopardy. I don't know if you guys saw Aaron Rodgers on Jeopardy a couple years ago, but, like, yeah, he answered every question, right? So he's very smart person and player. So I just think, again, that, you know, balancing this offense out has allowed them to be something that you can't just really say, like, all right, they're going to throw the ball 70% of the time, or they're going to do this. Like, no, they're literally 50-50, or 55% run, 45% pass, with arguably one of the most dangerous quarterbacks in the game. So it does make them dangerous, but as you can see, they've lost some tough games, and, you know, they've been blown out in some games as well. So the objective is to get after the quarterback and stop the run.
In your estimation, how different is Aaron Rodgers than he was in years past?
I don't think he's different at all. I just think he's learning a new system, and that takes time. I tell people all the time that offensive systems are like learning a new language. If you're speaking English for 12 years or how many years he was with Mike McCarthy, now all of a sudden you got to start speaking Spanish consistently, you're going to have some issues. You know, they're going to have some miscommunication. That's kind of what it comes down to, is that he just needs to get more comfortable in the pocket. He's still making those amazing throws. He's still checking into different things. And he's done a phenomenal job with just understanding this offense and getting there. But, I mean, again, it's not like the back of his hand. That same offense that they're running, I call games for the Los Angeles Rams, and I know I've been on this show before when they've come into town. And Jared Goff in year three is still having some issues because it takes time to get used to it.
He is Maurice Jones-Drew. Maurice, it's awesome to talk to you. I love watching you play, and I really appreciate the perspective you bring.
And I'm pumped to have you on, because in NCAA football 2006, I used to run all over people with you, and it's just awesome to have you on, man.
Thanks very much.
It's funny. I didn't use myself in that video game. I used the Florida State.
Oh, really?
I think because they had Pat Watkins. He was like a 6'5 safety, and I can just pick everything off.
Thanks very much, Maurice.
All right. See you guys later.
All right, that is Maurice Jones-Drew of the NFL Network with us. And we'll see. It's going to be it's an opportunity for Seattle to get past a hurdle that has tripped them up in the past. We're going to throw flags as we diagnose everything that went right and wrong today. That's coming up next.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
Yep, I'm looking forward to another weekend with Big Brother on the sideline. We talked about this yesterday. Watch for him. He'll be the official. He'll have a black hat on and probably a black windbreaker. And he's basically, he's got the earpiece to the brain trust back in New York, where they make all of the decisions now.
Okay.
Are we okay with that? Like, do you want control of the game to go to the guys that are in New York? Or do you
Sky
want the referee
judge.
That's on the field? Yeah, honestly.
I think it should be the guy who's on the field. I still think it should
be. He should be the ultimate say, right?
Yes. And I understand that might mean delays. I think that's what the NFL is trying to do by having the decisions made in New York. But at the same time, I think to be consistent with how a game is being called, I feel like it should be the referee that is there that is making the decision because he's the one in charge.
He is the one in charge. He should be the one that's
I am the law!
Yeah. And if you saw all of a sudden he's just like has to talk to dad to get say-so from New York, how important is he really?
That's a great question.
Lydia! Happy Blue Friday.
Happy Blue Friday. I can speak words, English words, to all of you out there. I am going to... Oh, sorry. Go ahead,
No.
Jane.
No. I was interrupting
It's your turn.
You.
It's your turn.
Come on, Lydia.
It's your turn.
I'm going to...
Steamroll me.
Here's the thing. There are really no bad pump-up songs. Whatever works for you, works for you. But, Paul, I'm going to throw a flag on you for saying, insinuating that Queen... is not one of the greatest of all time.
Well, to be fair. I was talking about We Will Rock You. It's not that I don't like the song. It's just I just don't get necessarily that pumped up for it. I get more pumped up by We Are the Champions by Queen, which is the song that plays, what, on the second side of that track?
But see, that's like a... That's not
that's a
pump
worst
up.
Song for
that's
pump
the
up.
End
yeah.
of the
movie.
End. That's when you that have
basking.
The victory.
That
credits
is
rolling.
At 360 degrees. I question your entire taste in pump-up songs.
Well,
I don't think you know what it means.
I question your
is
giant
it
face.
Is it because you always feel like a champion? There's nothing wrong with that. But maybe it's just because you don't need to be pumped up. You are just always feeling like a champion.
I don't know what it is. That song just doesn't pump me up. There are other songs that pump me up. That one.
Aerosmith does.
I'm flouncing around in slow motion.
Directed by, the credits are rolling.
Yeah.
Starring Joshua Jackson.
That was good.
I think it's going to need to be a work in progress. You're so nice that you criticized Paul for not liking Queen rather than the track
that
he steered
Queen.
Us for.
I love Queen. Hang on. That's not fair. You guys are totally misrepresenting what I said. It's just, that song doesn't pump me up that much. That's why I said,
I don't know how.
Yeah. It's impossible
either,
to hear that song and not want to have... this is probably too young for you. Do you remember Lennox Lewis fighting Evander Holyfield for the heavyweight title?
No, I do not.
Lennox Lewis came into Phil Collins. I can feel it coming in the
just
air.
Just like
tonight.
DJ Fluger.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that would pump me
up. It wasn't. It was not. No, it's a bad pump-up song.
But it's like, cool retrospect.
In
so
retrospect,
weird.
It's very cool. In retrospect, it's very
Wait,
cool.
Wait, what song?
In the Air Tonight.
Yeah. Okay, that was it.
You have to start at the cue point.
Because that's okay.
It started at the beginning of the song.
That drags out. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Goosebumps right now. Full body chills.
But you need to like fast forward about a minute and a half or so into it when he goes, enter the flow, the pace to know.
It's the drum. When the drum hits. Yeah. Everybody knows.
Sorry, table. I got excited.
See, I don't think it's that bad, Danny. I think that's a good pump-up song.
Yeah.
I remember watching it and we're like, why the hell is this happening? Somebody's texting in that Floyd Mayweather was using it.
Man.
Yeah. And it wasn't.
Well, he's
and
just
I was
a copycat,
wrong. It's not Lennox Lewis. It was Riddick. It was Riddick Bowe. My bad.
Oh.
My bad.
Okay.
Riddick Bowe.
Well, now we know.
Jess.
Oh,
flags.
Man. Yeah. You know what? This is going to be super cheesy, but I'm raising a flag for all the college coaches out there heading to the convention this weekend in Tennessee. It is a tough time of year for a lot. We've seen a lot of changes throughout the Pac-12, including right here in the state. And there's a lot of people looking for jobs and a lot of people who are looking to fill jobs. And I hope all the right ones happen. Good luck in Nashville.
It is a tough
hustle. So cheesy, sorry.
It's such a tough hustle. I mean, watching
it is.
It is a tough.
People
hustle.
Move their families all over, and you know this determines the rest of a lot of people's lives, not just those guys who are getting the job either. So, yep, cheese ball flag right there.
Paul,
I got a nice cheesy flag for everyone. First off, shout out to Josh McCown who played the second half of last week's playoff game with a torn hamstring. Not exactly the best look for Ziggy Ansah being outrun by a guy with a torn hamstring, but that's neither here nor there. There's a piece in the Seattle Times by Nicole Brodeur about a West Seattle woman named Rachel Balkovec, who is now going to be the first full-time woman minor league hitting coach for the New York Yankees. And it talks about her story, how she was basically working at a Lululemon, and on top of that, as a waitress, and she was applying to all these baseball teams. She was going by a different name and saying that she was a Division I catcher and not specifying that she was a softball catcher. She finally got this gig after working her way up. I'm really happy for her, and check out the piece. Nicole Brodeur did a really good job laying it out. It's a really interesting story.
That's a great flag, Paul.
Thank you.
My flag is going to be thrown at the NFL officiating office. Well, it's actually not the officiating office. Whoever the people are that are broadcasting these games, stop going to commercial for instant replay reviews. Stop it. Like, it's the one time that I want to sit there. I want to watch the replay four different ways. I want to know what's going to happen. I do not want to have to wait for the commercial. And then you come back, and it's not even that I want to figure it out before the officials announce it. I don't want to be surprised by the official. I want to see what happened. Stop going to commercial. There's a lot of times to go to commercial. Don't go to commercial then.
Also, I'm with you, Danny.
Also, please don't miss game action, like zooming in on a sideline reporter when the Texans Bills the greatest play almost in NFL history happened. It was pretty funny to see the sideline reporter's face as she looked on the field and she was like, what?
And then you hear Tessa Torre go, they're giving him a touchdown. They're saying that's a live ball and it's a touchdown.
It's the greatest play in Saturday football history.
Well, because it was special teams, you know?
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh, Joe loves those.
5-4-0. Oh, man. And the 405.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not going to be back, is he?
I don't think
they did you see that they changed up their producer? Yeah.
Oh, did they?
Maybe they'll get someone who doesn't give advice to yell.
Or maybe they'll give someone who has like a shock buzzer, and any time Testator starts veering off into melodrama, you just hear a...
The snap by that log snapper! Incredible!
Best pump-up song, Redman and Method Man, De Rock Wilder. Very underrated selection. I could co-sign with that one. Two final things. Because it's Blue Friday, we're asking you to head to 710sports.com/win. Submit a Blue Friday photo of yourself in Seahawks gear for a chance to win a Seahawks Pro Shop gift card. Thanks to our friends at the Seahawks Pro Shop who want to get you ready for the Seahawks playoffs matchup this weekend again. Details and rules for our Blue Friday photo contest at 710sports.com/win. And the final thing is, somebody objected to me calling Jimmy Graham a Ferrari. He's a Pontiac Fiero. The only car listed is not allowed at Texaco car washes back in the day.
Oh boy.
I found that very amusing. That's going to do it for us. Thanks to Jessamine and Lydia, who are the brains behind this operation. Maurice Jones-Drew was fun to talk to, the professor back in the fold. Paul, I'm going to work on your selection for motivational songs.
Well, you know what? Just listen to "Sweetest Victory" by Touch. You'll be ready to go. Geared up.
We're gonna make a dueling playlist.
Yeah, I like it.
And we'll make it available to all of you.
Let's have a vote. Let's have a vote on that.
We'll throw some "When the Bodies Hit the Floor" on there for you.
Ooh, like, I don't know if I can do that one though.
That's like weight Why room.
Not? Yeah, that's getting pumped up.
I can't do that
Hang
one.
Cleans only.
That song was ruined for me forever in a funny way because I one time saw a small 5-foot-nothing 50-year-old woman sing that at karaoke, and it's probably the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's just not the same song anymore.
I don't know if I could top that. Yeah.
When you said 5-foot-nothing, I thought you were talking about Rudy.
That's true. Rudy, great pump-up music in that music, in that movie. Tryouts. Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Later. Go Hawks.
It was just so much fun.